Well, I have to say that hymn is very precious to me. When growing up in Southport, it was one that Pastor Day used to choose very often, and he used to encourage his congregation with. I can hear him now saying, "Yes, yes, God is in control. He holds the key of all unknown." And it's a remarkable thing to be able to trust in a God who is sovereign. And that whatever we face, whether it be the dark clouds or the sunshine, we know that we face it with him. And that is a remarkable thing. And really it fits in with this evening's message as we continue in 1 Samuel and the series entitled The Rise of the Kings. And we come to this evening's message to tales of tragedy. And we see great darkness in the scriptures, but we're also going to see how God in his way was still working all things out. And even though the people couldn't see it, he would bring them into a dawn of great victory. But there were lessons that they needed to learn first. And that is why this is significant and helpful for us. But last time, we left Samuel and we focused on the workings of God's judgment on Israel and the consequences of the sin that had been building up for a number of years. We saw superstition as the desperation of the Israelites brought the ark and tried to use it as some sort of talisman to try and win the day. We saw the sadness as Israel was defeated and the ark is captured. There's much death and suffering, and the deaths of Hophni and Phinehas. And then we saw sovereignty, that being the sovereignty of God as he brought his judgments to pass. And yet all the while his hand was continuing to move. And even in the darkest moment, he was preparing a brighter future for his people. And so just to remind you, 3 D's, defeat. We saw, didn't we, that when God began to move, and the word of the Lord came to Samuel the first time, for him, it was a rare occasion in those days. The Philistines, the enemy, raised its head again, an opportune moment to strike. And we saw how the Philistines were a common enemy. The Israelites knew them. And so it is in our own lives that very often the enemy and the difficulty that we face do not always come in new guises, but can be the same challenge time and time again. And we saw the Philistines there, and they attacked. And they defeated Israel. 4,000 men were killed in the first skirmish. The elders went back. They considered why they had been defeated. It was the right question. They came up with the wrong answer. And as they took the ark, they thought that the ark was the answer to their problems. And as such, we saw that there was a great defeat. And Israel lost 30,000 men. But above all, they also lost the ark of God. And as such, it was a great defeat. And even in bringing the ark, rather than seeing God come with them, it actually galvanized the Philistines. And we saw a great defeat for the Israelites. We then saw devastation. The defeat was appalling. Suffering was immense. And the consequences would be devastating. There had been a massive loss of life. But as we will see, the ark of God had been captured the first time that it had ever fallen into enemy hands. But one thing is certain, that even though the loss of the ark was devastating for the people, it was part of God's plan. He would teach lessons both to the Israelites and to the Philistines. And through that, his name would be glorified all the more. And they would learn those lessons. And they would need to. And then we saw death. And we saw in verse 11 how Hophni and Phinehas died and were killed. There was a massive loss of life. The holy ark of God had been captured. But also, God was bringing his judgment to pass. And as he had stated so clearly through the man of God and through Samuel as well, Hophni and Phinehas were killed at the very same time. And we saw how God was beginning to move for his people. And he was beginning to work his purposes out. And even in fulfilling his judgments, even though they might seem harsh to us, God had been long-suffering towards Hophni and Phinehas. And this was the point when his judgment came. But even though that was the case for them, God in his mercy had removed sinful shepherds and would replace them with Samuel, who would guide his people into a new future under the Lord's hand. And so we saw that all take place. And then we come to these two tales of tragedy in the chapter that we have here. And really, I want you to sense straight away that it is a great tragedy. Very often when we come to these passages, we can see them as irrelevant to us or far away from us. But we need to see that there is a great loss that has been experienced. A lamentation of the people. There is weeping and crying out. It is a dark, dark day for Israel. And the reality of the loss of the ark filters back to the people and to Eli, the high priest. And the event is truly tragic and significant in the life of Israel. So much so that you will see that it is recorded at other points in the scriptures. In Psalm 78, it speaks of how God forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent he had placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity and his glory into the enemy's hands. And we see that this is recorded. And we are also told that the Lord abandoned the tabernacle at Shiloh and even would allow the enemy to destroy it. Jeremiah 7 makes that very clear. In fact, as we will see, Shiloh is held as an example of how God has worked, and it is a warning to his people in the future. Now, the Philistines will eventually return the ark, as we will see, God willing, in future weeks. The tabernacle will be placed at Nob, then Gibeon, and then eventually in the temple at Jerusalem. But in the midst of this grief, there are important lessons that we need to learn. Important lessons that we need to see in this 21st century that will help us, A, to know God and to know the way that he works, and also that when the dark days come, that we will have something to cling to. Because very often, when the darkness comes, you know, we grasp, don't we? We cannot see how things will work out. Our spirits can fail. We can become low. But we need to cling to a great God. And so we see these two tales of tragedy. The first sees the death of a servant of God who had judged Israel for 40 years. And the second sees the traumatic birth of a baby amidst the turmoil of defeat and devastation. The Israelites would have to come to terms with this great loss. They would have to face a new era in the aftermath of Eli. There were difficult times, much uncertainty. And yet sometimes it takes a tragedy to focus the mind, to remove all the complacency and the difficulty that's there, to see what is really important. And it removes those things that are not important. And very often the process of God's chastisement will bring the nation back to him, seeking him, confessing their sin, desiring to do his will. And also God in his providence will bring the ark back to them sooner than they thought and in a way that they could never have possibly imagined. You see, even in our darkest moments, the great God of heaven is at work. He never sleeps. But he always works on behalf of his people. In 1659, a Puritan writer penned these words, "God, who is infinite in wisdom, matchless in goodness, hath ordered our troubles, yea, many troubles, to come trooping in upon us on every side. As our mercies, so our crosses seldom come single. They usually come treading one upon the heels of another. They are like April showers. No sooner is one over, but another comes. It's mercy that every affliction is not execution, every correction not a damnation. The more the afflictions, the more the heart is raised heavenward." And so that is what we need to see. And what we will see in these verses tonight is trial and suffering that is brought about by disobedience. Yet the consequences are still painful. And the key is to make sure that the lessons are learnt. And so let's see them. The first tale, the death of Eli. Verses 12 to 18. Eli was aware that his sons had taken the ark from the Holy of Holies to the battlefield. Yet sadly, as had been the case with his sons earlier, he had been unable to stop them. They were truly out of control, wicked sons. And as he sat on the special seat by the tabernacle, it wasn't his sons that he was concerned for. His heart was trembling for the ark of God. And despite all that Eli knew of God's greatness and sovereignty, he feared for the outcome of the battle. Now, I am sure that this long-standing servant of God must have realized that the Lord was bringing his judgment to pass. He must have known. He must have been aware that this was the case. And I wonder what was going on in his mind. But one thing is certain. He awaited with great anxiety to hear how the events had transpired. And so he sat. And they say that bad news travels fast, don't they? That was certainly the case here. Once the defeat had taken place, a messenger ran back to Shiloh with the terrible news, and Eli was first alerted by the great shout of lamentation from the people at Shiloh. The ark would never return to Shiloh. That was the end for them with regards to this situation. Their city would dwindle because they had lost sight of all that they should have held so dear. God would remove the honor from them, and the tribe of Ephraim, which had been blessed with the presence of the ark for 340 years, lost that privilege. And instead, the honor would be given to the tribe of Judah. And when Shiloh is referred to in Jeremiah, it is underlined in his example of judgment. So they had much cause to cry out. And as Eli waited for the news, as Matthew Henry suggests, there would have been much on his mind that caused him to tremble, not least the fact that maybe, and this is to quote, maybe his own heart reproached him for not using his authority to prevent the carrying of the ark into the camp. One thing is sure, that Eli, as he sat in waiting, anxiously trembled for the outcome. He trembled for the ark, and despite the sin and the mistakes that he had made with his sons, despite the severe judgment that had been passed on him, despite all of those things, despite the way that he had invited it upon himself because of his indulgence of his sons, Eli was still a good man. And he had served God for many years. He had sought to serve the Lord, and he had trembled. He trembled to see the outcome of this circumstance and the consequences of what had taken place. You see, men of substance, they have concern for the things of God. And Eli was concerned. For all his failings, he was a man who had served the Lord. And in this situation, I believe that he recovers the sense of gravity and concern for the cause of God. His mistake, which we're all capable of and susceptible to, was that for a time he allowed the indulgence of his sons to come above concern for God's work. For us, we are in such danger. Why? Well, we need to be careful that we do not allow the concerns of this world, even family, responsibility, our own agendas and opinions, to come above Christ and his work. Everything must be in subjection to Christ. He must be our utmost concern. Everything else must be kept back. And so the messenger comes to Eli, and he personally comes to tell him the terrible news. Israel had been defeated. There had been great loss of life. Hophni and Phinehas were dead. But the worst he kept to the end. The ark of God had been captured. What news to receive. Defeat of Israel, tragic loss of life, even the death of his sons. Yet all of these things, whilst truly tragic, was not the thing that made his heart tremble. The thing that made his heart tremble, the greatest concern of his heart, was for the ark. And the news that the ark was gone, the news that the ark was captured, was the fatal blow that ended his earthly life. His heart was broken before his neck. We are unsure of the exact nature of Eli's death. It could potentially have been a stroke or a heart attack because of his age and the shock of the news. But as he fell back and broke his neck, he died. His physique is described as heavy. And as he was a man of advanced years, there was great damage potentially. But you see, God's judgment and word were being fulfilled. And sadly, Eli's branch of the priesthood would be removed and a new line would be introduced. It's a sad end to a life of service, 40 years of serving the people, only to see Israel humbled and defeated under the hand of the Philistines. And the underpinning reason was that the nation had backslidden. I believe that this summary from one commentator is helpful as we look at this tale of tragedy in Eli. It says, thus did Eli's sons set under a cloud. Thus were the folly and wickedness of those sons of his whom he had indulged his ruin at last. Thus does God sometimes set marks of his displeasure in this life upon good men who have misconducted themselves, that others may hear, fear, and take warning. A man may die miserably and yet not die eternally, may come to an untimely end, and yet the end be peace. And really, that is all I wish to say of Eli, that in his final moments, his heart trembled because of the Ark of God and how it had been captured. And in those final moments, his heart was moved for the things of God. And then secondly, we come to the second tale of woe, of tragedy, and the wife of Phinehas. And we come to the wife of Phinehas, and she is caught in this awful situation where her husband, her father-in-law, and her brother-in-law are all killed in one devastating time. And Hophni and Phinehas had abused the ark, using it as some sort of talisman. But I believe that the wife of Phinehas shows some spiritual insight. Why? Well, look, you see, Hophni and Phinehas, as they were, and Phinehas especially, was there, and they had concern to use the ark for their own furtherance, to try and secure success. Eli, on the other hand, had been concerned for the safety of the ark and the fact that it had been used carelessly, and his heart trembled. But notice the emphasis and the burden of Phinehas' wife. What is she concerned for? She's concerned for the glory of God. She's concerned for the glory of God. And that is the emphasis of the burden that she bears. And she names her son Ichabod. The glory is gone. And that was her last contribution to this mortal realm. What a time to give birth to a baby, to mark such an unhappy event at what should have been a joyful occasion of new life. Thrust into labour by the shock of the terrible news of defeat and the loss of her husband, like Eli, the capture of the ark was what rocked her to her very core, what moved her. And we see, don't we, that even when the aged try and point her to the child, even that cannot console her. She speaks of how the glory has departed. She laments at the situation that Israel finds itself in. You know, when reading this, it's very difficult for us to understand the grief and the difficulty that's bound here. And it's very difficult to see how this is relevant to us. But one thing that we can say is this, that as far as the wife of Phinehas saw it, without God's presence, without his glory and provision and favour, then life was not worth living. And her child would be a remembrance of such a terrible, terrible situation. And this whole narrative is so tragic, sadness pervades. Even in what should have been a joyful occasion, it is marked by grief. It is marked by tragedy. And even the baby, the little baby, will be a remembrance of this awful day. The glory has departed. And it is a very tragic situation. And the conclusion that she makes of God's glory departing is that the situation is hopeless. And in this terrible lesson, in this terrible episode, we learn an essential lesson. A man called H.L. Ellison states that the story of the wife of Phinehas is one of the most touching in the Bible. Yet he continues to say, but she was wrong. The glory of God had indeed departed, but not because the ark of God had been captured. The ark had been captured because the glory of God had already departed. Now this, from this episode, we need to see that sometimes God deals with us in a way that can make us feel that he has departed. Sometimes he can deal with us in a way that makes us feel isolated and alone. And sometimes that is necessary for us to make us see our need of him, to draw us back to him again, on our knees before him, grasping for him, pleading for him, and seeking him earnestly. And on another level, we also need to consider what a tragedy it is when the presence of God is not manifest amongst his people. And as one commentator asks, could Ichabod be justly written over many churches in our day and age? Well, that's a question that can provoke much debate. And we haven't got time to do that this evening. But it's an interesting thought and one that we should consider. Indeed, this is the day, really, of small things. And how, above all, we need to pray that God might move and that we need to stand and proclaim the Lord Jesus Christ. But let's continue to look at the lessons we can see. God's glory present amongst the camp of Israel symbolized God's presence with them. and identified them as the people of God. Exodus 40:34, it says, "Then the cloud covered the tabernacle of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle." It was a sign that God was with his people. Romans 9:4, "Who are Israelites to whom pertain the adoption, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the service of God, and the promises." And the people here, in this episode, they felt that with the departure of the ark, God's glory was gone, and so was his favor. They felt abandoned. They felt hopeless. They are caused and taken up with grief. It must have seemed that way to so many in Israel. What a dark, dark day that the Lord had abolished his covenant. And this was symbolized in the loss of the earthly furnishing of his glory. But the importance of this lesson is so significant that I want you to make sure that above anything else you listen to this now, that you do not miss this truth. You see, there must have been those amongst the Jews, whilst devastated by the events, they must have known that God did not dwell solely in temples made with hands. And whatever they might have felt, the reality was that God's glory had not permanently gone down the road, in the pocket of the Philistines, as it were, to be abused and humiliated. Dwelling upon the word of God would have brought the right conclusion that Israel did deserve her discipline, her chastisement, after striving away from God and turning from his way. The Philistines may have won a victory, but God had allowed it to take place in his sovereign purposes. And they were about to find out, the Philistines were about to find out, that it was a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And within a generation, God would restore and revive and re-energize his people once again, who would defeat the Philistines in such a manner that the Philistines would never again defeat the Israelites in this way. You see, the great God of heaven was not finished. He had not finished. Rather, his work was ongoing and his purposes were being brought to pass. He would not be defeated by an idolatrous nation, or indeed by the faltering devotion of his people. Even in the midst of the darkest moment, even in the midst of the darkest cloud, the sun still shines. As one commentator states, God would bless his people in ever greater measure in the fullness of his appointed time. As Christians, our experience sometimes echoes the dealings of God with Israel in the Old Testament. And the Lord can sometimes allow his children to experience difficult times. You might be there this night. You might be facing hardship. You might be engulfed in the dark cloud. But what you need to know is this: that God is still at work. That God still has his hand upon you. He still loves you and he cares for you. And even though you cannot see the future, he can. And he has it and he has you in his hand. And sometimes those circumstances and those hardships humble us. Sometimes they bring us even into shame before a watching world. Yet such rebuke, such discipline always has as its motivation the love of God and its purpose to bring us into a deeper relationship, an understanding of him. We cannot always see the way ahead, but God has it all in his hand. The Lord Jesus Christ, he is the Lord of all. History is his story. And he stands amongst his people. He stands amongst his church. And he has given them the promise that he will never leave them, nor forsake them. And if you are his, that promise is for you. That whatever you face, you may face it with him. One preacher recalls the time before he worked as a pastor and a minister. For many years he worked in a machine shop before entering the ministry. Apparently he's quite a practical man. And in the machine shop there was a department that was called a heat treat department. And some of the metal was heated to a point where it became white hot. So hot that it would be white. And across the top of that white hot metal and that white hot liquid that was there, there would be something that would emerge and come to the top, and it would place itself upon the metal. And they used to call it slag or dross, and it needed to be wiped away. And there would be someone who would be appointed in the special protective clothing to come and to wipe the dross away, to make the metal as nearly pure as possible. And that was the purpose, that in the refining of the heat, that the dross would be removed. And you see, in that we have an illustration, don't we? The heat of our trials brings to the surface the dross that binds us. And Jesus is the one who wipes it clean and continues to work in us to bring us to be more like himself. Trials always have a purpose. And even though we cannot see, God can see. And in due time, he will reveal to you his purpose and the way that he is working. And despite the darkness that had engulfed Israel and their despair, God was still at work, and he would lead them into a new era of spiritual victory. However, first, they needed to go through this process. They needed to be broken. Why? Because they needed to be brought to a place where they would fully rely on him once again. You see, they'd lost sight. They'd lost sight of the reality of the fact that they needed God in all things. Not just empty religion, not just keeping certain ceremonies, but they needed him. They needed him above all other things. And so we see, demonstrated here in Israel, it's a lesson that we need to heed right here in this very hour. We need to be broken. We need to be broken for God to lead us on and to bring us to maturity in him. You see, conversion is instant. When God works and he deals and he saves a person, it is something that takes place in an instant. But you see, spiritual maturity is something that takes many, many years in a submitted life. There's no easy path to maturity. It is something that takes time. And that is why we must treasure precious saints who have been walking the way for many years and who submit themselves to the Lord as he molds them and as they become more and more like him. Do you know, so much blessing in my life has come from saints who have trod the path for many, many years. Experiences that I don't possess as a young man that they have, guidance that they can give, are things we should treasure and never spurn. And you see, those of you who are older, those of you who have been walking the way for many years, you have a responsibility to share your experience, to stand with those who are younger, and to share the ways in which God has dealt graciously with you. You also have a responsibility to walk on with the Lord, to desire maturity, to pursue whom he would have you to be. But also, young people, you have a responsibility too, to respect and to learn from those who are older, from your brothers and sisters who are mature in the faith, who have walked and experienced so many things. There is much we can learn. And certainly the function should be that in a body such as this, that old and young, all together, sharing in the things that Christ has done. And with both circumstances, there is responsibility in all unto the Lord. But to bring us to maturity, God has to break us. And for some of us, that means over and over again. Too many Christians believe that maturity is something that just happens by reading the right books, by knowing the right things to say, or by just going on and floating through. But you see, that is not what we're told in the scriptures. We're to strive, to press on, to labour, to pursue the high calling. We have a responsibility to pursue the Lord. Why? Well, do you not want to know him? Do you not want to know him in deeper ways, experience his love in ways that you could never have imagined? You see, it is not just a burden, but it should be a pleasure for us to know the God who has dealt so well with us. And so we see that there needs to be a striving after maturity. It is the outworking of a submitted life that places all that they are under the Lord's hand. There is no attitude that sees accumulation. in the sense of, see what I have done for God. See the ways in which He has used me. See the ways in which in times past I have been doing all of these things for Him. No, that's not what we're talking about. You see, when a person continues to go and to grow before the Lord, it is not a process of accumulation, but it is a process of stripping away. You see, it's a refining that takes place. And it's not an easy thing to speak of, and not something that we should speak of lightly. But we are stripped away, and we are purged of those things that hinder our relationship with Him. And it brings us to the point that allows us to see that the most important thing in this life, the most important thing without reserve, is to know Him, to be found in Him, and to be in a right relationship with Him through Jesus Christ. You see, the Israelites needed to be stripped of their complacency, their neglect of the things of God, their reliance on the external trappings of religion, and they needed to be brought back to a place of reliance on God alone, and they would be. And it will be a glorious occasion, and all the victories that He will bring them through. But you see, they had to be brought to that place. You see, let me ask you this tonight. What is it that God is stripping away from your life? Because there is always something. What comes to mind when you think of being broken? What have you placed between you and total surrender to God? What do you trust more than you trust God? What do you love more than you love God? Because those things hinder our relationship with Him. And God, by His grace, will continue to work in your life, if you are His, to bring you on towards maturity. It is an ongoing work. And indeed, one of the beauties of the Scriptures and the gospel of grace is that He will bring His children through. And He will bring them through, sanctifying them, and then bringing them through to glorification. But it is a road that we need to tread. And God will continue to make you into the person He wants you to be, so you can appreciate Him more, serve Him better, and be a tool and be an aid to others around you to point them to wholeness and spiritual maturity in Christ. The path to maturity is not easy, but it is necessary. Yet the love of God, the joy that is set before us of knowing Him, of walking with Him, of fellowshipping with Him, do you know, it's all worthwhile. And even though the hardships may come, there is no greater joy than experiencing a right relationship with Him. It's marvellous, wonderful, and to know that God has His hand upon your life, nothing compares. Maybe you're facing a time this night. Maybe the emotional pain you are experiencing is more than you think that you can bear. Maybe you feel as though you are being broken even now. Or perhaps you're trying to deal with a series of disappointments. Maybe people have hurt you. But instead of retreating in fear, for that is the tactic that the enemy will use to keep you away from the Lord and His people, you need to come to the Lord. Come before Him. Tell Him how you feel. Tell Him what you struggle with. Ask Him to reveal to you the reality of the way that He is working in your life. And trust Him. You see, as we visit God's altar of brokenness, the result is always a deeper understanding of Him, a greater knowledge of Him. 1 Peter 4:12 and 13, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy." Brokenness is a sign of God's love and working in your life. He breaks your self-reliance because above all He loves you. And He knows that if you're left to your own ends, you will fall into all manner of difficulty and sin. God is working in you to prepare you for the work that He has for you to do and to make you the person He wants you to be. So as we come to a close this night, Israel experienced real tragedy But in the midst of that tragedy, there were lessons that they needed to learn. They needed to be broken. Yet in the darkness, God was still at work. And soon, He would bring about great victories in the life of Israel. God was not going to abandon His people, even though they felt like that. He was still there. And God was working. And if you are His this night, He will not abandon you. Try to think of these three ways that God uses brokenness. The way in which you will see a new element of His mercy and provision in your life. The way that your compassion for others will grow. Because you will know how they suffer and you will experience it with them. And you will come alongside them and you'll be able to share with them. And also you will understand more of how God desires you to be and the person He wants you to be. But in all of these things, never forget that the Lord desires the best for you. And He loves you. And although He may break you, He desires for you to know spiritual growth and victory in Jesus Christ. Only Jesus Christ can take your weaknesses and turn it into strength, hope, and honor. So even though we see this tragedy this night, God was bringing it all to pass, and He will bring His people to victory. So it is for the believer that even though we go through dark times, He will bring and work all things together for good to them that love Him. So the question is this. Will you trust Him? Will you trust Him? Will you stay in His care? Will you plead for Him, even in the darkness? Because if you do, He'll never fail you. He'll never let you down. Amen.